Good afternoon. Welcome to Division 6 of the Colorado Court of Appeals. We have one case scheduled on our 2:30 docket, AbSource Group versus ICAO. See the council or at council table and ready to proceed. You should have each received a set of written instructions about our oral argument procedures. Let me just ask at the outset if either council has any questions about those procedures? Okay. Let me remind council, if you would, when you come to the podium, identify yourself by name and attorney registration number. And I would ask if anybody in the audience has a cell phone or a pager or anything like that, please turn it off now so as not to interrupt council and the court during oral argument. And with that, we are ready for argument in AbSource versus ICAO.
May it please the court, my name is Greg Urich of Holland & Hart, registration number 2622, and I represent the appellant AbSource Group. This case presents the narrow issue of whether a single factor determines the outcome of whether an individual worker is an employee or an independent contractor. And that factor is whether that individual provided services to another organization in addition to the company for which services were provided. AbSource is a technical service company in the aviation industry. It's based in Parachute. It has 4 employees, and it engages independent contractors around the country and around the world to provide services to the aircraft manufacturing and airline industry. This case involved 2 categories of services, technical representatives and flight services. Flight services basically involves being engaged to move a commercial airliner from point A to point B anywhere in the world. The hearing officer ultimately found that all the pilots engaged by AbSource are independent contractors and that they were correctly classified in that fashion. The appeal relates to another category of services, technical representatives. The auditor initially found, as to 20 of these individuals, that 14 were properly classified as independent contractors and 6 should have been classified as employees, even though they all performed the same services. The hearing officer reversed as to 2, and now we are down to 4 of the 20 technical representatives. And the question is, are they independent contractors or are they employees? The hearing officer found that they were not under the direction and control of AbSource, and therefore the first prong of the independent contractor test was satisfied. And the question was whether they satisfy the second prong. Are they customarily engaged in an independent trade, occupation, profession, or business? Although there are multitude of factors that courts look at in deciding whether an individual is an independent contractor, the hearing officer turned on one factor and found that because these 4 individuals had not, during the period under review, 2006, provided services to some other company, that they couldn't be independent contractors, that one factor alone determined the outcome. And we know from how the hearing officer treated the other 2, concluding that because they had provided services to someone else during that period under review, they were properly classified as independent contractors. We know that that factor was outcome determinative. The panel decision was even more narrow. The panel decision affirmed the hearing officer because these individuals chose not to operate an independent business. The statute says independent trade, profession, occupation, or business, but because they didn't operate an independent business, that factor alone was determinative to the panel.
Mr. Urich, let me interrupt and I at this point apologize. I want to ask a question about Mr. Rankin. That's the one that I'm most befuddled about. This is the guy who I guess is employed full-time at American Airlines, if
correct.
I've got that right. Couple of questions. Is the logical extension of your argument with respect to Mr. Rankin that you can't have 2 employers for purposes of qualifying as an employee under the Act?
No.
And if not, help me with how to interpret the word independent. What does independent mean? Independent of what or who?
The decision that I would cite to the court is a decision which Judge Carparelli participated, the Nelson decision that we cited in our brief, where a very skilled carpenter was found to be an independent contractor under the identical language of the Workers' Compensation Act. And the significant factor noted by the court in that decision was that he was free to work on other projects and to work for others. Now, didn't indicate that he was doing that. In fact, the indication from the facts was that he was working on one job, he'd finish it, and he'd move on to another. And so during the period when he was working for that employer, he was only working for that company or a contractor. And so the conclusion from that decision is that the skill level was very significant in deciding whether this person was independent, and his ability, because of the market power that skill gave him, to choose who he would work for. And the fact is that these gentlemen, all four of them, are highly skilled. They can take an airplane apart, not just a Cessna, a commercial aircraft, and put it back together again. They determine whether aircraft are airworthy. Very, very responsible positions, very technical positions. And because of that skill level and their ability to exercise their own market power, they can determine what jobs they are going to do. Now, focusing on Tim Rankin, he only worked for AvSource once. And he was found to be an employee of AvSource for one small job. That's all that's in the record. He worked full-time for American Airlines. He could have been an employee of AvSource if he'd been their messenger, like the messengers in Speedy Messenger, because that would not have required the skill level that allowed him to exercise the market power to control his own destiny and decide what jobs he's going to do and what jobs he's not going to do. In that case, given his skill level, he could make those determinations. And I think that makes him engaged in an independent trade or profession or occupation. Now,
if you look at the word customarily, I mean, I understand what you're saying. Let me kind of say it back to you. So we have some of these employees who are engaged in an occupation, and their occupation has unique skills, and they're not told exactly how to apply their skills. They're told to be somewhere at some time and to apply their skills, and there's not control, as I would understand it, over how they applied the skills. But what is the difference when we say customarily engaged in that occupation? What does that mean?
In this case, I don't think that is a distinction that makes a difference. Okay. Because they were always doing the same thing. They worked for McDonnell Douglas, for the military. They spent their whole career in aircraft maintenance and repair. And so they continued that work as independent contractors after retirement, in the case of three of them. And I think customarily in their case meant all the time they were in this independent trade, profession, or occupation. I think where it can make a difference and has in the decisions, and I think I would distinguish those decisions on this basis. Customarily engaged in an independent business, I think, requires something a little different. Speedy Messenger case, or the carpet installer cases that we've cited in our brief, involve people who don't have the level of skill of these gentlemen. I mean, I'm sure they're good at what they do, but a courier and a carpet installer don't spend a career acquiring the skills necessary to do their jobs. And so I think in those cases, it is understandable that this court has routinely required a showing of engaging in an independent business. They aren't really professionals, whether they're in a trade or occupation, I'm not sure, but an independent business to show that, in fact, they are working for other companies at the same time. And that's why I think those cases are distinguishable from ours.
But why should skill level make a difference? I mean, the statute also uses the word trade. Well, you know, that maybe you don't have to have the highest level of skill to have a trade, but it's still in the statute. Isn't what I glean from all these cases is that there's an aspect of entrepreneurship that's at issue. If you're out there trying to hustle on your own to get work, then maybe you're not an employee under the statute. Isn't that the more relevant consideration than what the level of skill is?
Well, I think the Longview decision gives us some guidance on that. And it talks about being engaged in this independent trade, occupation, profession, or business that exists separate and apart from the relationship with a particular employer. And my argument would be that these four gentlemen had that skill level that's necessary to have marketability separate and apart from this employer. Mr. Reed, the gentleman who basically sent the business to AvSource, he was called by the Italian airline to work for them and come to Italy. He didn't want to be bothered with setting up an independent contractor relationship and getting a contractor code with them, so he told AvSource to do it. And they set up the relationship. He did the same with Emery Air Freight because his skills put him in demand to be categorized as being an independent occupation profession. And whether he was in an independent business, I don't think matters. The state's brief never talks about anything other than these gentlemen were not in an independent business. Well, if the trappings of an independent business are a business card, a trade name, employees, then they weren't in an independent business. But they were in an independent occupation, trade, or profession by reason of their skill level. And Judge Loeb, I think that's why skill level matters.
Pardon me, Mr. Urich.
Yes.
I'm assuming that you mean relevant skill level.
Sure.
Because hypothetically, let's say Mr. Rankin were a full-time employed poet, we wouldn't be talking about this, would we? Because that's not, you know, poetry and aircraft maintenance are two profoundly different things. So doesn't the phrase customarily engaged in an independent occupation have to have some relevance to the job that he's doing for your company?
Sure. And I think you're absolutely right, Judge Bernard, that the skill has to be related to the work that this person is doing, in the case of Mr. Rankin, for American Airlines. And I think that it would be very hard for me to argue that he was an independent contractor if he moonlighted with AvSource and didn't have the skills that put him in a position where he could do that work for American Airlines.
So I guess for us, the critical question is, does this language, this reference to independent business, et cetera, does that have to be something that he runs himself, or can he be employed by another entity like Mr. Rankin is by American Airlines?
Mr. Rankin's skills make him in an independent business. I don't think the independent business is working for American Airlines. I think in his case, just by coincidence, he's the only one who works for an employer and provides those same services on a moonlighting basis, on a one-shot basis, not under the direction and control of AvSource, because he has the skills that he's gained from a career with American Airlines. Interestingly, he was referred to AvSource by another gentleman by the name of Brian Story, who also worked full-time for American Airlines, moonlighted with AvSource, and he was found to be an independent contractor by the auditor.
But let's talk about that one a little bit, because isn't the testimony at trial, or at the hearing, that Mr. Story, unlike Mr. Rankin, was entrepreneurial? He was out there hustling business from other companies. That's what the testimony at trial of your witness was.
He may have been out there hustling other business. Our point is simply that it shouldn't matter whether he's out there hustling other business. I mean, I can't get in the head of the auditor to know why she made that determination. Perhaps that was the reason. But for purposes of our appeal, I think it doesn't matter. He has the skill level to be considered in an independent profession or business. And with that, I'd like to reserve the brief remainder of my time.
All right.
Thank you.
About a minute and 23 seconds.
May it please the court, counsel. I am Katie Allison, attorney registration number 39430, appearing on behalf of the Industrial Claim Appeals Office. Your honors, F-Source did not meet its burden of proving that the four workers in this case were independent contractors. First, the statute requires that the workers be customarily engaged in an independent trade, occupation, profession, business in order to be independent contractors. The Avsource workers simply were not. Second, the law does not exempt retirees from the independent business requirement. And third, the law does not exempt skilled workers from the independent business requirement. Unless the court has any immediate questions, I will address the Avsource workers' status as independent as employees in the following order. First, I will address the reasons why Avsource workers are presumed to be employees until proven otherwise. Second, I will address the reasons why the four workers were not engaged in an independent business. And third, I will address Avsource's arguments.
Ms. Allison, before you get there,
go ahead.
I'd like you to weigh in on the questions we've been asking Mr. Urich about what this customarily engaged in an independent business, trade, occupation, what does that mean? Particularly, what does the word independent mean?
That's a great question. I think what one case that has that I think is immensely important to this inquiry is the Locke versus Longacre case, and it's 772 Pacific 2nd, 685. And in that case, the court said, a claimant must be engaged in a business venture at the same time the claimant is providing services for the employer. Locke also said, actual and customary independent business or professional activity must be demonstrated by evidence. And I think what your honors have sort of addressed today is that I think the workers need to be entrepreneurial, just as you said. And I think the Locke case says the exact same thing.
Was Locke talking about the entire statutory, all the words used, business, trade, occupation? I could see that there is a difference between those. If it is a business, that's one thing, but an independent trade, an independent occupation, was it talking about those things?
I believe that it was, Your Honor. In Locke, it was a licensed practical nurse, and she was performing services solely for Locke for 3 years. And the court found that she would have been unable to accept similar employment because of her responsibilities under her agreement with Locke. She, I don't think that she necessarily had her own business name, but she was only performing services by her trade for Locke.
But here, we don't have that. I mean, we have the fact that these four guys were, if you accept out Mr. Rankin's employment with American Airlines, they were only performing these kinds of services for Avsource, but apparently they were doing that of their own volition. In other words, that wasn't anything Avsource was requiring them to do. There was no exclusivity.
Right.
So,
and I agree with you 100% that exclusivity is one factor to look at, and it says so in the statute. But I think in this case, the Act does not exempt retirees necessarily from having to be engaged in an independent trade to satisfy the statute. The real issue we're dealing with here is that the workers, Avsource is sort of saying that the workers will not be filing for unemployment because they're retired. So Avsource should not have to be paying into the unemployment fund. But the Act accounts for this situation. The amount the employer has to pay into the unemployment fund is directly related to how many claims the employer has had against it, and that's the experience rating. And the experience rating, it goes down substantially if the employer does not have any claims against it. It can go down to zero. I think right now it can only go down to 0.01%, but it goes down substantially. And so that's what, in this case, the the act has already accounted for the idea that these workers may not be claiming unemployment benefits. And I think something else to mention is that the language of the act is very strong. It says, it describes unemployment as a serious menace to the health, morals, and welfare of the people of this state. It describes unemployment as a burden which falls with crushing force upon the unemployed worker and his family. You can see why the statute does not exempt employers from paying unemployment taxes, even if it is this not non-exclusive relationship, even if it is retirees. I'll go back to addressing why the outsource workers in this case are presumed to be employees. The employment statute says that services performed by an individual for another shall be deemed to be employment until it is proven otherwise. So in this case, the outsource workers start out as employees for purposes of our analysis. A document can create a rebuttable presumption that makes them independent contractors for our analysis, but there was no such document in this case. So outsource has the burden of proving that the workers were not employees and that the workers satisfy both the independent trade requirement and the control and direction requirement. I would like to address the reasons the hearing officer correctly determined that the four workers in question did not have an independent business. To be an independent contractor, the law is clear that the workers must have their own independent trade, business, occupation, profession, and there's no question in this case that the four workers did not. When Mr. Cunningham was asked whether he does the same type of work for anyone else, he said, "I've had offers, but I don't do it now. I didn't, and I don't do it now either."
Pardon me, Ms. Allison, on that score, did Mr. Rankin do the same kind of work for Avsource that he did for American Airlines?
Your Honor, I actually don't know the answer to that question.
Would it matter?
I think it would in a certain respect, and that shows that one of the factors, and it's not the single factor, as opposing counsel has stated, is whether or not the worker is performing services for somebody else. In this case, Mr. Rankin presumably was performing services for American Airlines. It has to be the same type. The statute is very clear in saying that it has to be the same type of business that they are performing for Avsource. And so if Mr. Rankin were performing the same type of work for American Airlines that it did for Avsource, that is one factor in Avsource's favor that he was an independent contractor. It isn't the sole factor, and I think I'll stick with that. It isn't the sole factor.
Ms. Allison, the statute, though, says customarily engaged in an independent trade, occupation, profession, or business. So apparently the statute anticipates there's a difference between a business and a trade, or a business and a profession. So what would that difference be?
That's a great question, Your Honor. And I think what is most important about the statute is that the keywords are engaged in an independent. I don't think the keywords are the trade, the business, the occupation, or the profession, because I'm licensed to practice law. I'm not engaged in an independent trade merely because I have this license. I am employed by the Department of Law. It could be argued that all employees bring their own unique skills to the workplace, but their unique skills by themselves does not mean that these workers are engaged in an independent trade, profession, occupation, business.
Well, what if you have your profession as a lawyer and you hung up your shingle and only one client has knocked on your door? The client is a company. And you work for that company. You can turn it down or accept it whenever you want. And what you've decided is, you know, that company provides me all the work that I need so I can still have my life. Does that make you an employee?
I think
just because you you know, you've decided one client's good enough.
I think you have to look at a multitude of factors, but I think that in that case that you're describing, I think it doesn't. And the reason is, it's exactly as you said, you set up your own shingle. You were engaged in your own independent business venture. You had a place of business, a business card.
Well, certainly this isn't going to come down to a business card. I mean, we're not going to make this decision based on the existence of a business card.
Absolutely not, Your Honor, and that's why there are the multitude of factors. There's the factors in the statute, and there's the factors in the Longview case, and a business card is one of them.
So I mean, why wouldn't one say that if you're independent, you've got your skill, you have one client, you're happy, that these other individuals, they've decided, you know what, I'm happy. I've got my retirement income. I have one client. I don't want any other clients. I'm not out looking for any other clients. I've stopped advertising, whatever. Why aren't they the same position as you, as the lawyer who is perfectly happy not representing anybody else?
I think, well, the fundamental difference is the statute, which says that you have to be customarily engaged in independent trade, occupation, profession, business, and the cases that have followed from that. And they say that you have to be actually engaged in an independent venture. There's factors to look at. I'll go through the Longview factors. You have to look at whether a worker may...
So excuse me a minute. So in our example, you would likely be an employee of that company.
No, I think the person who has set up her own shingle and has decided that she wants to work solely for this one client, she still has her own independent venture.
Okay. Go ahead.
And again, if I may piggyback on to Judge Carparelli's question, I still am unclear independent of what. Because clearly, in Mr. Rankin's case, American Airlines is independent of AvSource. American Airlines does not take marching orders from AvSource, and vice versa. So what does independent mean? Because he's clearly working for a different entity. What does it mean?
I think I might sound like a broken record here, but I think it goes back to that business venture. And that's where the Longview factors come in about having a business card, a business listing, a business address, business telephone number. You have a financial investment such that you would be vulnerable to suffering financial loss. You have your own equipment. You have other employees potentially, or you could employ them. You carry your own liability insurance and your own workers' comp insurance.
So in other words, they've got to be independent contractors before they show up at AvSource's door?
I don't think necessarily, but I do think that they need to have, and that's where the skill comes in, they need to have a skill such that they can set up their own independent business. And I think that, yeah, the moment that they do go work for AvSource, they need to, at that moment, either set it up right then or have already had it. And I'd also actually like to address what you just asked too about Mr. Rankin. I just want to note, Mr. Rankin himself did not testify. The employer testified that Mr. Rankin was an American Airlines employee. And the best answer I can give here is the hearing officer was the fact finder. The hearing officer, it was his responsibility to determine the credibility of the witnesses. And there's a potential in this case that the hearing officer did not find the testimony about Mr. Rankin credible. There's also a potential here that, as you're saying, this independent venture, there are all the factors to go through. There's a potential that the hearing officer found that the employer did not meet its burden of proving that Mr. Rankin was in an independent trade. And again, Mr. Rankin is an employee until proven otherwise, and Mr. Rankin didn't testify. I'd like to quickly address the kind of fundamental issue I see here between my argument and opposing counsel's argument. Opposing counsel stood up here and he said, whether he was in an independent business, I don't think that matters. Your Honors, the statute clearly says that you must be engaged in an independent trade, occupation, profession, or business in order to satisfy the statute. And unless there are any further questions, I would ask that you uphold the panel's ruling that the workers, the employees are work, are, the workers are employees under the Employment Security Act. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Allison. Mr. Urich, you've got about a little less than a minute and a half.
Thank you, Your Honor. Independent trade, occupation, profession, or business. They don't have to be engaged in an independent business, just one of those four. Secondly, if Ms. Allison hung up her shingle as Katie Allison Esquire, not a PC, she had clients beating down her door and chose to work for only one of them, nobody would ever claim that she was an employee of that company. Her agency wouldn't claim that. Thirdly, Mr. Rankin was a ramp employee who basically got the planes off when they had mechanical problems at American Airlines, the same kind of work that he did for AvSource. And finally, the lack of predictability of this standard, it, to me, is one of the biggest problems with it. How does an employer, how does a company know whether it has an independent contractor or an employee? They can't force them to work for someone else. They may not know if they're working for someone else. They could ask, I suppose, how often do you have to do that? They categorize these individuals based on the standard in the industry and the skill level that causes them to be independent of AvSource. I think that's independent of AvSource is what the language in the statute is intended to mean. Because they are their own economic unit and they can chart their own course. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Urich. Thank you to both counsel for your very helpful arguments. Case will stand submitted. We will issue an opinion in due course. That completes our docket for this afternoon.